They tried to stop my show, but I said, hold up. Y'all know how many hoes done tried to hold this hoe up.
Tokyo
Talk
boy.
the music.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Craig's Pop Life Podcast, a black gay excursion into pop culture with your host, me, Craig Seymour. Hey, everybody. How's it going? Glad to be back. Sorry, I've been away for so long. Like I've been saying, I think I was saying this in a couple of podcast episodes ago, but, you know, the way technology is now, the way you do things can change overnight. And the way that you have been doing something, they can make some change in the app, in the technology, and the whatever, the settings, and the what have you. And then, you know, the way you used to do things is completely different, and you have to start from scratch. And so that's essentially what I'm doing now, and that's why I've been away for so long, because I have to kind of start from scratch in the way that I record the podcast. So I really do appreciate everybody for sticking with me, for those that did, or have, or will, or plan to. And, you know, again, I just thank you so much, and just don't ever think that I'm gone, because I just don't care. I'm not thinking about people that do enjoy the podcast and do enjoy my content and everything like that. It's never that. It's always that there's some sort of technological obstacle going on. And those are the things that just kind of send me over the top, because I'm just like a content maker. I just want to create the content and just be done with it. I don't want to have to be converting files and, you know, figuring out how to play a track within the file, all that kind of stuff. I'm a writer, you know what I mean? Like, and a lot of people don't know this, but I'm not even a computer writer. I'm like literally a pen and paper writer. You know, I write everything longhand. All my books, all my articles, everything is written longhand. So I'm not like a person that's scared of technology or anything like that. I love to use technology, but when it comes to creating something that I have to put my name on and I have to use it as an outlet for my creativity, I need to find that window of where it makes sense. And it just, sometimes it takes me a while to figure out what that is. So again, I appreciate your patience. But what I've been doing with this iteration of the podcast is I've been revisiting some of my previous work. And this week is really, really special because it's my first piece that I ever published in the Village Voice. And Village Voice no longer exists now. I know a lot of people listening to this don't even know what that is. But it really was the most important paper to me when I was becoming a critic, because it was a paper that really took criticism seriously. It really took Black culture seriously. It really took gay culture seriously. And so it was a place where it felt like my people. You know what I mean? So as I was trying to make my name within the journalism industry, and not really within the journalism industry, quite frankly, as I was trying to make my name within music criticism, the Village Voice was one of the most important places that I wanted to be able to publish something in, because the Village Voice was also a gateway into other music criticism gigs. So like, you know, the Spin editors read Village Voice, the Rolling Stone editors, not that they ever called me until like last year, but the Rolling Stone editors read the Village Voice. So it really was an important, it really was just, I can't even underestimate how important it is. And I'd actually recommend this book that just came out. It's by Tricia Romano. It's called The Freaks Came Out to Write: The Definitive History of the Village Voice, the Radical Paper That Changed American Culture. And I think, hyperbole in that subtitle. It really was the radical paper that changed American culture. I mean, it really was the standard for what was cool and what was underground for decades, until the internet kind of came along and wiped everything away. But it really was that, you know, it was that girl, as they would say. And I just want to share with you a couple of things from the book that I just personally found, like, that spoke to me, because they really spoke to why the Village Voice was so important to me. Where's this quote? Okay, this is from the great music critic Ann Powers, who is one of my favorite. I don't have a lot of people I admire. really don't, especially writers. Like, I do not have a lot of writers that I admire. It's not like I, you know, hate on anybody or anything like that. But the people that I read something and I go, wow, that really sort of changed how I think about something. Not just that it was a pleasant thing to read or something, but it really went deeper and really kind of made me think about music and life and all sorts of things different. Anne Powers does that on the regular, and she's one of the few people that do. So that's why I've always loved Anne Powers. But anyway, this is her talking about The Voice. She says, "The Voice style of criticism was the template for what everything is now." Again, I'm gonna reread that. "The Voice style of criticism was the template for what everything is now. What has become the hot take and the deep dive on the web. The Voice was more about making those associative leaps, writing in a style that was informal but deep, and writing in a style that was personal, but that was meant to make a mark and wasn't just memoir." So, I mean, that's my lane. That's basically what I've done for my entire career, right? Hot takes, deep dives, spending a lot of time on thinking about things that most people don't really give that much consideration to, and also writing in a style that's personal, but wasn't just memoir. And so that really, the whole Voice style of criticism and writing really shaped my entire career. And there are a couple more quotes that I wanted to share. Oh yeah, the other cool thing about The Voice is that, you know, they weren't necessarily looking for writers that were coming out of, some journalism school or something like that, and who had a lot of writing, or a lot of writing clips or all that kind of stuff. They were really looking for people who were on the scene and who lived the life. This is from Richard Goldstein. He says, "Our philosophy was that you do not hire an expert. You hire someone who is living through the phenomenon worth covering." And I was really blessed enough to have been able to write a couple of important pieces in The Voice during 90s R&B, because I lived and breathed, and 90s R&B was everything to me, and then they gave me the opportunity to write about 90s R&B. Yeah, but just, you know, they just hired people that cared about stuff and cared deeply about the culture. So my road to The Voice was kind of interesting. You know, from the stuff that I've been reading in past podcasts, that I started writing for Metro Weekly in a nightlife guide, nightlife and arts and entertainment guide in Washington, D.C. So, I mean, I was one of those people, like, it just didn't matter. Like, I wasn't a journalist. I wasn't anything. So I would send clips everywhere because I just wanted to write. I just wanted the opportunity to write and learn and everything like that. But I wasn't thinking, you know, I was never really scared about sending my clips out, especially, and this was the days, I'm pretty sure there was email and stuff, I don't know where email starts, but this was in the days where you really would send out physical clips. Like, I would sat there and photocopy my clips from Metro Weekly, and I would send them to the music editor at the Village Voice, who at the time happened to be Eric Weisbar. And I remember he called me back, and I just love him so much because he's just so honest, but he was like, he said he didn't like he really didn't like my clips at all, but because of the letter that I wrote to go along with the clips, I guess I had expressed how much into certain type of music, especially R&B, that I was, so he decided to give me a chance, and that was just extraordinary. Like, I just couldn't believe it. It was literally a dream come true. It was one of the most, people always think things, you know, I don't perceive my life in ways that other people perceive their lives. So, like, people think, oh, you have a PhD, oh, whatever. PhD isn't even, the diploma isn't even in my house. Like, it's not like I don't care about it, and it's not like I devalue other people who achieved it. It's just in terms of my personal, you know, whatever, in terms of my personal values and stuff, I don't really value the end state of it that much. I don't value like the diploma that much. I certainly value the privilege that I had to be able to be a grad student, and I definitely value what I learned and everything like that, but just that end result thing, the diploma, that doesn't mean anything to me. But something like Eric Weisbar giving me my first assignment in The Voice, that means something to me. If there was a way to put that into a, I don't know, like somebody could make a quilt of it or quilt it into a pillow or whatever, or I don't, it was a phone conversation, so that'd be really hard to do. But my point is, it was really, really important to me. And I really wanted to write about Kelly Price, and he thought that that was cool because, of course, Kelly Price, R&B singer, who started out as a background singer for Mariah Carey, it was kind of a, you know, cool release and everything like that. So I had this assignment to write about Kelly Price, but then Island, I can't remember, Island T-Neck, pushed her album back. So all of a sudden I had like my dream assignment, and then the album was pushed back for like 3 or 4 months. And I was just like, oh no, what in the world? I felt like everything that I had worked for was slipping from me. So what I did was I ended up pitching Eric on Sparkle, who was a protege. I hate telling this, saying this person's name, but it's history, so it is what it is. Obviously, you know, ick. But anyway, Sparkle, who was a protege of R. Kelly. So he ended up going for that. And it was like, whew, thank you. So I was able to keep, you know, that connection there, even with Kelly Price, even with Kelly Price's record label delaying her album. So what I'm going to do is read the review, and then I'll just talk a little bit about it afterwards. So I don't know. Can you pause? See, this is what gets on my nerves. Like, I have no idea how to use this program I'm using. I don't know how to pause. I need to blow my nose, and I don't know how to pause or anything like that, but apparently you can edit through text and stuff like that. So I'm going to now say I'm about to blow my nose, so I'm going to edit out whatever noises come from me blowing my nose, and then I will come back and read this piece, and I hope the technology works. Whatever. That's why I'm pencil and paper. Pencil and paper, you don't have to do it. If it was pencil and paper, I could just put the pencil down. And says, well, I don't use pencil or paper. I at least use a pen. So let's be clear. But my point is, if I needed to blow my nose while I'm writing something, I could just put the pen down and blow my nose. I don't have to go through all these shenanigans. So edit this out. Okay, we're back. Tissue crisis averted. So this is the piece. Sparkle. Oh, and it was June 2nd, 1998. So it's coming on an anniversary. I wish I was organized enough. Well, it's not like I can't be organized, but I wish I cared about things like dates and anniversaries enough. But we're coming on an anniversary of this, so this is kind of cool. And maybe one day I will. And when I say that I'm not into this kind of stuff, I just kind of mean that it's not my normal inclination to do it, but I don't have anything against people. I mean, I enjoy looking at, you know, Instagram posts of anniversaries and stuff like that. It's just that that's not something that I'm ever thinking of. So anyway, here's my Sparkle piece. If you're an R&B fan and recently broke up with someone, your theme songs are likely Mary J. Blige's 7 Days remix and Be Careful, the hit He Said, She Said duet between R. Kelly and his female protege, Sparkle. Mary provides the perfect line to scream before slamming down the phone. Don't claim your ass is ready when you're not, because if you flame me out, I'll blow up your spot. Be Careful offers a different paradigm. You better be careful what you say to me, because it might turn around on you. A message more cautionary than angry, but also a time bomb. The smash success of Be Careful, along with Erykah Badu's Tyrone and Peggy Scott Adams' Bill, suggests that the blues part of R&B is finally becoming more than an anachronistic abbreviation. After years of drowning in the bourgeois excesses of Babyface, people want songs to speak to their Jerry Springer dreams. Many black middle-class teens who grew up on hip-hop are ready to trade their gangster fantasies for working-class fantasies. That's why on his new single, Chico DeBarge talks about wanting to buy you diamonds as soon as they increase his pay. And why on Be Careful, Sparkle reminds you that she was there when your ass was out of work, nigga. Sparkle appeals because she's convincingly conveys such round-the-way sentiments, like how in the Be Careful video, she stops the song mid-lyric, points at Kelly, who's about to interrupt her, and sings, "Wait a minute, let me finish." This extends throughout her debut on cuts like Time to Move On and I'm Gone, which she sings in a soothing soprano that's not tragic or heroic, just endearingly matter-of-fact. With Sparkle, Kelly gets what every male star wants, his own female act a la the Mary Jane Girls. The difference is that where male producers from Ike Turner to Prince try to sell us their adolescent fantasies of female sexuality, R. Kelly gives us what guest rapper Cam'ron describes on the album's bouncy opener, Good Life, as a good wife, take me out the hood life. Though it's bucking tradition, maybe Sparkle is not Kelly's sexual fantasy. After all, he's already shared his pedophilic tendencies on Aaliyah's first album. Perhaps Sparkle is another kind of romantic fantasy, the good girl who suffered for your stank ass. Or given his frequent live and recorded tributes to his late mother, maybe Sparkle is even R. Kelly's portrait of his own mom's as a young woman. Sadie, the early years. The theme of Sparkle as baby mama saturates the album like a wet diaper. On What About, she asks her estranged to think about the children. She says he should have took care of family on the one in a million-ish I'm Gone. And on the epic Be Careful video, we get a crane shot of Sparkle holding Little Man's hand. Video director R. Kelly crafts a campy yet moving clip for Be Careful, which opens with Curtis Mayfield's Push a Man, a fitting choice since Sparkle's the namesake of Blaxploitation's most sacred melodrama, and the spark for Aretha Franklin's Curtis Mayfield-produced soundtrack, which everyone but me prefers to the vocals of the actresses in the movie. This Afro-kitsch Blaxploitation homage features scenes snipped from ghetto traumas past and present. Sparkle and Kelly fight, throw shit, and at the end, Sparkle leaves Kelly with, or for, a Tyrone-like sister girlfriend. Kelly applies his auteurist designs to the album as well. Written, produced, and arranged by R. Kelly, appears on the cover sticker, the back panel, and embossed on the CD itself. This written, arranged, produced credit applies not just to the album, but to Sparkle's whole persona. There's no information released on Sparkle. We don't yet know her real name, her official or phony age, where she's from, or where she's at. Apparently, she's not yet doing any press. Kelly probably figures there's nothing she can say herself that he hasn't said better on the album. Sparkle doesn't even get the litany of acknowledgments requisite for hip-hop and R&B albums. What must her mama or the folk at her church think? If Kelly wants us to buy her as the good woman, why is he selling her like a noir femme fatale? Am I R. Kelly's dupe, though, because I think there's a promising artist behind this contrived enigma? Do I believe I can fly? Sparkle may have to leave Kelly, or at least develop a more collaborative relationship with him. Other female artists have certainly escaped the confines created by their male producers, but will Sparkle ultimately be Tina and Mary, able to survive and even thrive without their male mentors? Or Sherelle, whose career after leaving the Jan Lewis camp lends new poignancy to her biggest hit, Everything I Miss at Home? Whichever the case, if Sparkle ever does want to leave R. Kelly, at least he's already given her the right words to say. So that was my Sparkle review for The Village Voice. Y'all, I was so stoked. I remember, because this was back in the newsstand days, and I was living in Maryland at the time, right outside of D.C., and you couldn't just get The Village Voice everywhere. And of course, everything wasn't, I can't even remember the sort of history of when things were available on the web and website, but it was not available on the web. It was something that you had to go physically get. So I remember having to go, you know, drive to a newsstand and go get the copy and seeing that and seeing my name. And it was just really, really special. So, and I guess this review, having copied this review, however photocopied it is, and all kind of, I don't know, whatever, it's a photocopy. It's not a bad photocopy. It's not a great photocopy. But anyway, I guess that's like a diploma to me. I mean, I guess that's one of the things that I really, really am sort of proud of. So in any event, I really appreciate you hanging with me, and I hope you enjoyed the Sparkle review. And if this works right, I hope to be able to do this more regularly, because I hope that I've figured it out. But who knows? But I will figure something out. Okay, so that's the thing. If this particular software and all this kind of stuff doesn't work, that's one thing. But I do want to continue to be able to communicate with y'all and everything like that. And I really appreciate you for listening. So I'll figure it out. I don't know what it'll be. But I just want everybody to know that if you don't hear from me for a while, if for some reason I'm not doing the podcast, or I'm not putting the newsletters out or whatever like that, there's something going on, probably with more likely than not with the technology, that is totally stressing me out, and that's why I'm not doing it. But it certainly does not have anything to do with my love for you guys and, well, my love for you all. I like to use non-sexist language. So anyway, thank you so much for listening, and I can't wait to talk to you again. Again, I love you guys. Oh my God, I just said it again. I love you all so much. Okay, bye.